Air Venture is worth more to Oshkosh than even EAA thought. A lawsuit against the FAA by New England towns may be falling apart. And if you're going to be stranded on Christmas Eve, you could do worse than Maui. This is Aero News. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for downloading this AeroCast. Here's what's up in aviation for Monday, December 29th, 2008. The Experimental Aircraft Association, as part of its lobbying for public support of improvements at Whitman Field, is pointing to a recent University of Wisconsin Oshkosh study that shows Air Venture brings an estimated $110 million in economic benefits to area counties each year. The university's Center for Community Partnerships conducted the independent study during last summer's event, surveying visitors from every U.S. state and 15 other nations about their length of stay, daily spending, overall impressions of the event, and other demographic information. According to EAA, the study indicates a direct economic impact of $84 million, with $26 million more in multiplier or ripple effects in secondary spending and job creation. More than 1,700 jobs were supported by last summer's event, which drew an estimated attendance of 540,000 people and more than 10,000 aircraft. EAA met political resistance over its master plan, proposing a tax increment finance district to get city seed money for a $17 million upgrade of facilities at Whitman Regional Airport. EAA's own earlier estimate placed Air Venture's total economic impact at about $80 million a year. If you're going to go to court with the FAA, you need two things, patience and a boatload of money. Two Connecticut towns may have concluded they don't have enough of the latter. The Danbury News-Times reports the cities of Danbury and Norwalk are both late on their shares for legal fees in a 2007 lawsuit against the FAA's plans to reorganize Metro New York airspace. At one time, 13 communities had banded together to fight changes they thought would bring them more jet noise. Norwalk still owes about $68,000 it promised the effort. Ridgefield official Rudy Marconi, who is also chairman of the Alliance for Sensible Airspace Planning, sent an email last week to Norwalk Mayor Richard Muccia requesting payment so the group could make an obligatory payment to the law firm retained to fight the proposal. Muccia appears concerned about the status of the lawsuit. He says some of the money had already been paid, but added he's awaiting feedback on how the funds already paid were spent. Quote, "We're still not sure about the status of the lawsuit. We're hoping the state will pick up the balance of the cost now that the Attorney General is involved," unquote. Danbury Mayor Mark Boughton says his community will make good on its $70,000 balance due the Alliance, quote, "but after that, we aren't contributing anymore." Boughton calls the lawsuit, quote, "top-heavy on lobbyists and overhead, which, quite frankly, we can't afford right now," unquote. About 1,000 travelers were stranded at Maui's Kahului Airport on Christmas Eve after an electrical short disabled the lights on the airport's longest runway. MSNBC reported all outbound domestic and international flights were canceled, and inbound flights were diverted to Honolulu. Security officials said they did not know why the lights went out, but technicians working on the problem had things back in working order on Friday. Lights on a shorter runway were not affected. Passenger Jim Kalmanson commented, quote, "I have two tickets to the Celtics-Lakers game in my hands here at the pool bar in Maui," unquote. He was disappointed to have to watch the game on TV, but added, quote, "we're happy we're not stuck in the snow in Cleveland," unquote. He should talk to the people who spent five consecutive nights in the Salt Lake City bus station after a snowstorm closed I-84 at the Idaho border. Makes stranded in Maui sound kind of like an oxymoron. Pirates operating off the coast of Somalia have taken in an estimated $30 million in ransom so far this year, but their jobs appear to be getting tougher. The New York Times reports that an Egyptian ship, the Wadi Al Arab, was carrying a shipment of grain through the Gulf of Aden Thursday when armed Somali pirates in a speedboat gave chase. Another passing ship summoned help from a multinational naval coalition force in the area. A helicopter dispatched from the German Navy frigate Karlsruhe drove off the pirates, but not before one person aboard the Wadi Al Arab was shot and wounded. He was medevaced by a second German chopper. Last week, China also announced its intent to assist in the Gulf and dispatched two destroyers and a supply ship with 70 special operations forces and a crew of 800. Up next on ANN, a South Carolina Learjet crash sprouts another lawsuit. France's first woman in space survives an overdose. And we may be about to see the end of the shampoo ban on airliners. You're listening to Aero News.
Diamond Aircraft's new DA-40 Diamond Star XL includes all popular Diamond options, combined with the sensational new Garmin GFC700 Autopilot, a higher performance power plant, and increased gross weight. This makes the Diamond Star XL the perfect choice for affordable personal flying. The Diamond Star XL features equipment and enhancements that increase performance, capability, safety, convenience, and comfort. Visit Diamond on the web at www.diamondair.com or call 888-359-3220.
Finally, aviation headsets have evolved. Clarity Aloft merges the most advanced technologies from the fields of hearing science, aviation communications, and performance audio. Clarity Aloft headsets use Comply canal tips composed of soft, viscoelastic foam, the same foam tips used in advanced hearing aids. The noise-canceling microphone is optimized for speech frequencies in high-noise environments. The low-profile headband is featherweight and comfortable. Just three reasons why you need to feel and hear the difference a Clarity Aloft stereo headset can make for you. For more information, call 612-747-3197 or check out the innovative Clarity Aloft headsets on the web at clarityaloft.com.
We're back with more of your Aero Briefing for December 29th. I'm Paul Platt. The second survivor of the September 19th crash of a chartered Learjet 60 at South Carolina's Columbia Metropolitan Airport has filed suit in the aftermath of the accident. The Associated Press reports Adam Goldstein, a.k.a. DJAM, filed suit last week against Global Exec Aviation, Clay Lacy Aviation, InterTravel, Goodyear Tire and Rubber, Bombardier, and the estates of the two pilots killed in the crash. Goldstein joins former Blink-182 drummer Travis Barker, the only other survivor, and the mother of a deceased victim in legal action, according to the New York Times. Investigators have determined that the plane was traveling at or above its minimum takeoff speed when the crew thought a tire burst. Now they're trying to determine why the pilots decided aborting the takeoff was preferable to getting airborne. The first French woman in space, Claudie Hagnier, was rushed to the hospital last week after an apparent suicide attempt. AFP News reports the 51-year-old was discovered in her home on Tuesday. An unidentified source said she had overdosed on pills, but had regained consciousness by the time she arrived at the hospital. Hagnier flew to Russia's Mir space station in 1996 as a representative of the former French CNES space agency and followed up with a Soyuz flight to the International Space Station in 2001. She was the first European woman on board the ISS. She later served as France's Minister for Research and New Technologies, then as European Affairs Minister until 2005. Hey, here's something to look forward to in 2009. Security officials in both the U.S. and the U.K. say they may soon ease restrictions on liquids in carry-on bags brought aboard airliners. The Daily Telegraph says the International Air Transport Association, which represents 230 airlines, is optimistic that more advanced scanners able to tell benign liquids from dangerous ones will soon be in place at checkpoints. Passengers are currently limited to 100 milliliters, or about 3.5 ounces, of liquids or pastes, and only as many containers as will fit in a 1-quart or 1-liter Ziploc bag. The restriction was put in place after detection of a plot by terrorists to smuggle liquid ingredients for explosives aboard an airliner in 2006. Scientists were able to determine that it would have been nearly impossible to make a working bomb by mixing liquids in an airliner bathroom, but that point got lost in the zeal of security agencies. British companies such as Smiths Detection have been performing laboratory testing and developing software for the new equipment, and U.S. Transportation Security Administration Chief Kip Hawley announced in October that the restrictions might be eased within about a year. There are aviation museums dedicated to military aircraft and experimentals, so it probably makes sense there should be a great big one for commercial aircraft of days gone by. The National Museum of Commercial Aviation in the Atlanta suburb of Forest Park is trying to make that happen. The museum's executive director, Grant Wainscott, says he plans to raise $8 million and break ground in 18 months for a new 16 to 20,000 square foot learning center, ideally situated next to Atlanta's Hartsfield-Jackson International Airport. Georgia already boasts the Warner Robins Museum of Aviation, the mighty 8th Air Force Museum in Savannah, and a military museum is planned near Lockheed Martin's facility in Marietta, north of Atlanta. The National Museum of Commercial Aviation would be unique, and administrators hope for congressional designation as a national museum within a year. Wainscott observes, quote, "Aviation helped build this state," unquote. Museum Chairman Chuck Mayer described the facility as, quote, "a place where someone can come in and take a walk down memory lane or get inspired to join the industry," unquote. The museum currently occupies a modest 3,800 square foot space in a Forest Park strip mall and features artifacts including vintage uniforms, pins, serving ware, toys, books, and research material dating back to the 1920s. The Atlanta Journal-Constitution reports the recent donation of a Southern Airways 404 flight simulator from California has become the museum's first interactive display. Mayer commented that raising funds for the museum within the industry is difficult because none of the airlines appears to be looking for a tax write-off at the moment. Still ahead, AOPA's next sweepstakes plane won't need refurbishing. The Navy decides it needs new battleships more than it needs reconnaissance planes. And even trained professionals get stuck in the snowbanks. You're listening to Aero News.
Uncramp your style in a new Citation CJ2 Plus from Cessna. Now with integrated ProLine 21 avionics, FADEC, and a restyled cockpit and cabin. In the CJ2 Plus, you'll carry more payload than you could in the original CJ2. You'll climb and cruise faster. You'll have the freedom to use even shorter runways, and you'll do it all on less fuel. For a sure thing, call 1-800-4-CESSNA.
We're back to wrap up your Aero Briefing for Monday, December 29th. I'm Paul Plack. One of the changes that comes with every new year is the announcement of another AOPA sweepstakes aircraft. Lately, the sweepstakes has started with vintage Pipers and Cessnas and spent most of the year announcing upgrades in paint, interiors, engines, and avionics, providing many AOPA sponsors a platform to strut their stuff and building interest among contestants. But 2009 will be something a little different. AOPA has received a donated 2005 Cirrus SR-22 G2, described as pristine. The plane came from Air Safety Foundation member and donor Lloyd Huck, a philanthropist who also served as an Army Air Corps B-29 bomber pilot during World War II. The plane has all the goodies that came standard on the 2005 Cirrus, including ballistic parachute, Avadyne Integra avionics, leather interior. It also has the TKS anti-icing system. It's described as needing nothing. But it just wouldn't be the AOPA Let's Go Flying sweepstakes without at least giving the plane a snazzy paint job. This year's plane will actually get several different paint schemes as it makes its way to aviation events during the year, courtesy of AOPA sponsor Air Graphics LLC in Madison, Wisconsin, of course. The U.S. Navy's effort to replace aging P-3C Orion reconnaissance aircraft may take a backseat to acquiring new battleships. Bloomberg reports funding for the purchase, maintenance, and operation of four Boeing P-8A Poseidon jets may be diverted to build a new destroyer. Deputy Defense Secretary Gordon England has approved shifting about $940 million from the Poseidon program to pay for the last of three DDG-1000 destroyers from Northrop Grumman. Navy officials originally planned to purchase six P-8As in the first stage of production, expected to ultimately reach 108 airplanes. The Navy has set a priority to have 313 deployable warships in service by 2020. That's up from a current fleet of 283. The service grounded a third of its aging P-3C Orion fleet last December over concerns about structural fatigue in the plane's wings. The first P-8A is scheduled to fly early in 2009, with entry into service with the Navy in 2013. A century of technological improvements have made airplanes very graceful and efficient in the air. But, just like birds, they're still kind of clumsy on the ground. WGN9TV reports a Southwest 737 bound for Los Angeles got its right main gear off into some plowed snow on a taxiway at Chicago's Midway Airport about 9 a.m. Friday. No one was injured, but the mishap obstructed the taxiway and closed runway 13 center for several hours. Fortunately, it happened when traffic was reduced by a winter storm anyway. Passengers deplaned and were taken by bus back to the terminal to await a replacement aircraft, which finally took off just before noon. It wasn't immediately known if there was any damage to the 737. And finally, here's a sign of the times to look forward to in 2009. A major U.S. airport is about to introduce kiosks at which airline passengers will be able to assuage their guilt over contributing to global warming by buying carbon offsets right there in the terminal. It probably won't surprise you to learn that airport is in San Francisco. In fact, the city's airport commission has approved $163,000 in funding for the project. The San Francisco Chronicle reports the program may be the first of its kind in the world and will start up in the spring. Steve McDougall, Executive VP for Renewable Energies Company 3 Degrees, sees no hypocrisy in booking a flight then buying offsets. Quote, obviously people need to fly sometimes. No one expects them to stop, but they should consider taking steps to reduce their impacts, unquote. All you'll have to do is step up to a kiosk, calculate the cost of your carbon footprint based on your trip, run your credit card through the slot, and you'll get a receipt showing how your money will be spent to offset global warming. While firm prices haven't been announced, 3 Degrees says figure on one person contributing about 500 pounds of carbon dioxide per hour, with a two-hour plane trip worth about $4 in offsets. Quote, it's definitely not going to double your ticket or anything. It's going to end up being a small percentage of your total airfare, unquote. Okay, somebody's got to ask it. With the airlines looking for every a la carte charge they can find, how did they miss this one? That's the latest from Aero News. The ANN special feature is on holiday hiatus. It'll return this Friday, January 2nd, 2009. If you haven't done it yet, subscribe to our AeroCasts. Find them on iTunes, Yahoo, Odeo, and at our website, www.aero-news.net. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for listening. Have a clear and unlimited day.